Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. آمين.
You're listening to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected.
Community-Wide Shura and AM360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, to strengthen our national intelligentsia and network. Contact Underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake this world into a better place.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome, dear believers and listening audience. You are listening to Keeping It Real. I'm your host, the Princess Karima Aziz, and I'll be hosting tonight's show. Forgive me. Okay, yeah, I'll be hosting tonight's show. And I would like to start by reciting, I'd like to start by declaring that there's no God but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is the messenger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I would also like to begin with Al-Fatiha. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahir rabbil alamin, rahmanir rahim. Maliki yawmiddin. Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. Ihdinas siratal mustaqim. Siratal ladina an'amta 'alayhim wa la ta'min.
I also would like to, Bismillah, Rahman, Rahim, Kulu, Allahu Ahad, Allahu Samad, Lam Yalid, Wa Lam Yulad, Wa Lam Yakulu, Kufu, Wa Ahad. Amen. All right, so we're going to go into tonight's show. I wanted to make sure that everyone listening, within the sound of my voice, understand who we are, whose we are, and who we intend to represent.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about, or continuing to talk about, the healing of the individual parent within the parent mother and father relationship. We've come to recognize in this reconstruction of parenting that we have to go back and address the individual components of the parents, if you will, because if we're putting together two parents that are broken or unhealed or have not healed from their own trauma or childhood trauma, then they facilitate the wounding of their next generation, and that facilitation of wounds continue to go on. And so our work would be futile if we didn't stop to address the serious nature and the pervasiveness of childhood trauma. It is the most dangerous, it's the most pervasive, and the most toxic of mankind. The childhood trauma, it's very pervasive. It's the most influential tool that the enemy uses to facilitate fear. Fear of whatever kind. We can talk about the anatomy of fear in subsequent shows, but today we're going to be talking about healing from childhood trauma. We've been referencing the book, The Body Keeps the Score. The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. And we recognize that through studies, research, data collected in the recent years, there's a pattern of personality disorders that exist or that come about through the exposure to trauma. Now, I want to clarify, this isn't a new discovery of personality discovery. Meaning personality disorder is not a new discovery. We may have a place now where we can categorize what it is that we see. We can label what it is that we see, or maybe we're just giving new labels to it. A new or old, I'm sorry, an old phenomenon, if you will. Definition of parenting, we're going to visit that again just to set the foundation. Parenting and Family Reconstruction Learning Lab is what we have graduated from to a show now called Keeping It Real. We're going to keep it real about parenting. We're going to be keeping it real about the scriptures, the ayat, the wisdom, the hadith. We're going to keep it real. We're going to make, which simply means that we're going to break the information down as we talk about it and make it practical and apply. Because we're not going to rebuild parenting and not have the application of the word, and whether it's in hadith, sunnah, Quran, wherever scriptural wisdom we would gather. So parenting is the process of promoting physical, emotional, social, intellectual, and spiritual and financial development of a child from infancy to adulthood. Now, as I read that, I'm going to remind us that we have a disadvantage in Native people of color to this land. Some of us like to call ourselves African Americans. I stutter at that term because I recognize, believe, and accept the fact that my people are native to this land. We've already always been native to this land. If you are an African American and you have heritage in another continent, this information does also apply to you. Basically, anyone who is a victim or victim of chattel slavery in America or any of the specifically in America. I would say that this information does apply to other cultures, other places where chattel slavery was practiced, stuff for love. But I'm going to specifically speak about chattel slavery here in America and the effect of chattel slavery on the people of color, native to this country's ability to parent, how chattel slavery affects our parenting, how effective parenting is, and why do we need a reconstruction, if you will. First of all, we never constructed parenting after a destruction of our culture. We have never effectively constructed parenting after the destruction of our culture, number one. Number two, the experience of chattel slavery contributed to our cultural practices that we have now as it relates to parenting and is directly responsible for the ineffective parenting that we have today. This is pervasive whether in any class that exists from the descendants of chattel slavery. So whether you are PhD, MA'd, BA'd, AA'd, all the way down to GED, whether you make a million, whether you make 100,000, whether you're on food stamps, this is pervasive. It crosses socioeconomical lines, boundaries, if you will. It does. If we have not dealt with the healing or the healing from generational trauma, from the psychic trauma of chattel slavery, then we are perpetuating and facilitating and the continuous seeding, if you will, of destructive parenting. And so in 2023, we're looking at where this new generation is. The latest generation, I'd like to say, the latest generation here in America. Now, even though we're focusing on the people of color here in America, the descendants of chattel slavery, this template, if you will, is applied to every other ethnic group or any group around the world. Kind of like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So there's so much information that has come from studying the descendants of chattel slavery, studying the success of chattel slavery in every area for those that were looking for certain results, if you will, whatever specific result. But looking at the data, paying attention to the social constructs, practices, and culture, we can see that there is a problem with today's parenting. The youth are not following our leadership, and the question is, are we leading? Are we leading, if you will? In the previous show, we had a guest, the writer, author of The American Psychic Trauma. Naima Latifa was our guest. I apologize for badgering the name of the book. It's just a little absent-minded at the time. I do apologize. But we were talking about the descendants of chattel slavery and the psychic trauma that they endured. And we're talking and we discussed our parenting styles that came from the psychic trauma of chattel slavery. And if we ever dealt with really, and as a culture, as a people of culture, that psychic trauma, the power of the trauma that we endure psychologically, and that we continue to open our children up to experience. For example, if you're still practicing punishment, I have to ask, we're asking, where does that fit into protecting the child from psychological trauma? How do you protect the child from psychological trauma if you are the source of the child's pain? It's cognitive dissonance, at the very least, cognitive dissonance. Okay, so it's right at about
moving forward.
That's what we do. So the most pervasive, the most prevalent kind of abuse to children in America, but specifically in the group that we're talking about, is sexual child abuse. Sexual child abuse is the most is extremely damaging to a child's psyche. It puts them in a position to have to break their connection with reality in order to stay alive or to survive, if you will. And in learning the anatomy of trauma or learning the anatomy of emotional injury, we learned that when the person, when the human being is responding to an injury, the human being responds or reacts from a place of fear. The way that the body is designed to operate is when you are fearful and you are running, quote-unquote, to save your life, you are operating out of a set of nerves that do not lead to thinking. Literally, the nerves in your body that respond to fear, that respond to fight or flight, do not intercept the brain, the two different nervous systems. So I wanted to reiterate that because as we talk about trauma and how trauma leads to the personality disorders that we're going to talk about later on in tonight's show, we can have a clear understanding as to why they develop. And basically, they develop out of a long-term exposure to trauma or to an injury, or if you will. So if you can just count and just you can appreciate supposedly 400 years of exposure to injury over and over and over again, that does lend itself to trauma. And then it does go directly, travels directly to trauma, if you will. So we are 150 years approximately post-chattel slavery, and the work has not been done to debrief or to unwrap or to dig up or to uproot the trauma that or the injuries that we experienced during chattel slavery. So in short, are we still abusing our children? in a way that we try to discipline them because we mean well. But in meaning well, if you're not healed, there's no better that you can do than your own upbringing. And if we're not disconnected from generations, generations, generations back, there's no change that you can see that can be attributed to us making, being better parents, if you will. Right at about half an hour after the show, we're going to go ahead and take the first break of the show, if you will. Stay tuned. You're listening to Hemp 360, keeping it real. And please don't stray away.
The following message supports a CWSC interfaith collaborative to help bring 21st century job and career opportunities through accelerated education to communities nationwide, and especially to historically disadvantaged communities and communities of color. For more information on CWSC faith-based health, jobs, and financial literacy initiatives, visit cwsc.us. Together, we can remake the world.
Are you doing odd jobs or considering a career change? Or are you a recent graduate with no work experience and unable to find that dream job? Are you new in the country? Well, did you know there were over 6,000 job vacancies in IT and finance, according to published news reports? Pathways Global's affiliated partner, ICIT Canada, has helped over 600 past students land jobs with some of the best companies in North America. You shall receive a guaranteed job interview call once you complete our financial analyst practical training program. Call us today at 716-292-9571. That number again is 716-292-9571. Or visit us online at www.pathwayglobal.net. We have a unique program covering advanced Microsoft Excel, SAP and business intelligence, financial modeling and analysis, planning, budgeting, forecasting, and month-end reporting, providing you the practical vocational skills which would otherwise take 3 or more years to acquire on the job. But with our program, you can have this experience in only 3 months. We also prepare your resume and help you with mock interview practice exercises to make you a perfect job candidate. Pathway Global offers a range of courses through a user-friendly online portal accessible 24/7 from anywhere in the world. All you need is a computer and an internet connection to start learning online today. That's pathwayglobal.net, and connect with us too at cwsc.us or call 716-292-9571. And be sure to mention the CWSC team for savings.
We're after this, if somebody shows up, I'm saying. And we're back. You're listening to Keeping It Real. This is Princess Kareem Aziz, and we're talking about childhood trauma and healing from childhood trauma. Before we left, we were discussing, I was just going over a little bit of history and the reason why we feel like we should address, talk about, discuss, and make plans to heal from childhood trauma, if you will. The definition of trauma is something, keep in mind that all injuries, all trauma results from an injury, but not all injury lends to trauma. The key difference is the body responding as if the injury is continuous or continues to happen, or responds as if the injury is still a physical threat. That makes it traumatizing. Whereas lots of injuries heal. Most injuries do heal, if you will. And we were discussing the reiterating the difference between the two nervous systems, one that's responsible for everyday living, one that's responsible for that allows you to rest and critically think, and then the other nervous system that responds in the event of a physical threat. So imagine living in an environment where you're under a physical threat at all times. The opportunity to rest and think critically is not a privilege at the time. You don't have the privilege to think, if you will. So there's a physical injury or emotional injury. Both can lend or drive or lead to trauma if you're not healing. Trauma happens. It's not the event. It's the response to the event is what I'm saying. So we're going to be talking right now about personality disorders develop out of extreme trauma, specifically childhood trauma. That's what we're talking about today. I'm going to go on and define some of the childhood before I go into the personality disorders, I want to talk about the effect on a child's biological clock. And the biological clock is an integral of timekeeping system, It's how everything intricately functions and the pace at which that functioning happens. It's a highly influential force in behaviors and emotions, including anger, reactive aggression, if you will. So your biological clock, in short, is sped up when you're injured or experience childhood abuse. Your clock is sped up. So in short, that means you live faster and you die faster. You're running, if you will, faster. There are predictive rhythms in the expression of anger. Those rhythms, that rhythm gets disrupted, of course. The disruption of the normal fixing of the circadian system increases the likelihood of aggressive behaviors. And if you can think about it, there's no time to search for the circuit to go through a thinking process. There's a short circuit at survival. A short circuit at surviving. Chronic expressions of anger can disrupt the normal rhythmic cycles of psychological activities and create conditions for pathologies, such as the pathologies in the physical and pathologies in the mental, and yes, even pathologies in the spiritual. We're going to talk about all of those. The pathologies in the physical, we know them all too well. Diabetes, heart disease, stroke, cancers. Pathologies in the emotional or psychological could be the personality disorders. Prolonged trauma is an event over, the event is over, but you continue to react to things as if you are in danger. So if you can imagine that the trauma is over, you now have the privilege afforded to you to think, calculate, assess, regroup and replan. All of that does not even come to the table, to the surface. It's never even considered because you just don't have the capacity to do it. You're not, the body is not capable the way Allah made the body for it to be able to assess, to be able to reflect, to be able to address, regroup as it heals, if it's always responding to prolonged trauma. You're always just struggling to stay alive. Traumatized individuals have difficulties experiencing joy and pleasure and staying in line with the foundation of trauma, what it does to the body physically. It seems to reason, and that seems to reason that that's true, and it makes sense. For example, the prolonged trauma of poverty and the prolonged trauma of experience to racism. So the injury of racism is the injury is not physically there all the time, but the fear does raise up, does initiate or ignite or trigger the trauma, if you will, of racism. So we're going to look at how to look at the how the body keeps the score. The doctor describes the paradigm of the primitive brain and the advanced or evolved brain. This paradigm could also be the thinking brain and the emotional brain, or the thinking part of the human being, or the calculated part of the human being, or the emotional part of the human being. There's also the paradigm of the masculine and the feminine. There are many different paradigms that play out very well as we use allegory to study Allah's word, and then to incorporate the basic understanding and science, if you will. So the brain loves to expect the reality that's not actually there. So the primitive brain, when you are operating out of your primitive brain, it is responding to just the expectation of something fretful happening. The brain starts to do things as a result of perceived threat or the injury. So there is a overuse of the primitive brain and not much use of the evolved brain, if you will, the thinking, if you will. The stifling, this is stifling you if you are not in immediate danger. It's stifling if you're not in immediate danger. It's stifling to always expect to be in a place where you're expecting something to happen, where you're always in fear of something happening that's going to harm you, if you will. So what? Obviously, you can't learn. You cannot comprehend. You will not function under normal conditions. And anything that requires a higher brain function to do, absolutely cannot do it. No matter how much you try, it's not possible. It's just not possible. So people who are responding or through their trauma by developing traits of personality disorders, you see them in relationships, how it shows up in relationships. Number one, you feel out of your element, you feel crazy. And number two, the people around you are in relationships feel like you're out of your element, and they see you as crazy, if you will. This will make sense if we get into the definition, brief definition of the personality disorders, if you will. There's a part of your brain that gets stuck and doesn't realize that the threat is over. Constantly on guard, waiting for it to happen again, again, and again. We're going to be talking about personality. I'm going to give the definition of personality now. And it's a distinctive pattern of thought, emotion, and behavior that make up an individual style of interacting with the physical and social environment. Personality is the distinctive pattern of thought, emotion, and behavior that make up an individual style of interacting with the physical and social environment. There are five personality traits, called the five G's, if you will. The first one is openness to experience new things, different things. Obviously, if you have a healthy personality, you are open to experience new things, and you're not rigid and unwilling or not flexible. Your conscientiousness is high, organized, dutiful, disciplined, achievement focused, and you're good planners. If you have low conscientiousness, you are more spontaneous, free-willing, and careless, if you will. Bear in mind, I want us to keep in mind the lessons we learned in outwitting the enemy. And the enemy's intention is to keep man operating out of a consistent place of fear. So that free willingness and being careless, that is from a place, that is from the place of operating consistently out of fear. There's a extroversion and introversion part of your personality. The extrovert is very talkative, sociable, prefer group activities. The introvert is speaks less. They need alone time, prefer solidarity activities. They're perfectly fine and charming at parties. Why am I mentioning these personality traits? Because we want to know what the norm is so we can see where the abnorm deviates. We want to have an appreciation for the norm so we can see where the abnorm deviates. The fourth personality trait is, how agreeable are you? Are you always disagreeable? Do you find yourself disagreeing all of the time? That may be something to consider or think about if you're always disagreeable. And that's going to also, we're going to talk about the spiritual element of a personality disorder, because this being disagreeable shuts down your access to love's blessings by using gratitude as a tool. You can't use gratitude as a tool if you're being disagreeable all the time, if that's part of your character, if part of your personality is that you're disagreeable. And keeping in line with the lesson that we learn and what the enemy wants from us, we can be better prepared at resisting giving the enemy what he wants from us. We've heard that if we resist the enemy, he shall flee from us. Now, the fifth one is neuroticism, worry factor. If you're highly neurotic, you worry a lot. You easily slip into a anxious anxiety and dependency. You're easily able to slip into anxiety and depression, and you are poor at handling criticism. So if you can just imagine operating out of a primitive brain, these are functions that take a higher brain to these are things that take a higher brain to function in. Being agreeable, having less, not being so worried, being emotionally stable, resting in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, believing in the unseen, believing in fear, in the power of fearing Allah and not fearing shaitan. Stuff of the law. As we study the story, when we study stories, if we look at the stories allegorically, because we are able to, we're given permission to, I don't find any story that does not address the personality and egotistical injuries. And I don't find any story that do address personality and egotistical injuries that do not have a prescription for such injuries or a prevention for such injuries, if you will. And a perfect example, one example would be the story of Musa, alayhi salam, and we'll get into that next, if you will. We're right at 2:45, so I'm going to go ahead and take a break. If you will, go ahead and take a break for our sponsors. You're listening to Keep It Real. We're here Keep It Real, addressing the healing aspect of the parenting, if you will. And thank you all for joining us. Please do continue to join us here on Tuesdays from 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for 2 hours. We will be listening to me where you can connect online at am360.org or live streaming at area code 515-605-9891. Do stay tuned right after, shortly there, minutes thereafter, we'll be joined by Sister Manera. It's all about marriage and her showing all about it. It's all about marriage. Okay, so stay tuned. Don't stray. Do stay. We'll be right back after important word
from our sponsors.
The following message supports a CWSC Interfaith Collaborative to help bring 21st century job and career opportunities through accelerated education to communities nationwide, and especially to historically disadvantaged communities and communities of color. For more information on CWSC faith-based health, jobs, and financial literacy initiatives, visit cwsc.us. Together, we can remake the world.
Are you doing odd jobs or considering a career change? Or are you a recent graduate with no work experience and unable to find that dream job? Are you new in the country? Well, did you know there were over 6,000 job vacancies in IT and finance, according to published news reports? Pathway Global's affiliated partner, ICIT Canada, has helped over 600 past students land jobs with some of the best companies in North America. You shall receive a guaranteed job interview call once you complete our financial analyst practical training program. Call us today at 716-292-9571. That number again is 716-292-9571. Or visit us online at www.pathwayglobal.net. We have a unique program covering advanced Microsoft Excel, SAP and business intelligence, financial modeling and analysis, planning, budgeting, forecasting, and month-end reporting, providing you the practical vocational skills which would otherwise take 3 or more years to acquire on the job. But with our program, you can have this experience in only 3 months. We also prepare your resume and help you with mock interview practice exercises to make you a perfect job candidate. Pathway Global offers a range of courses through a user-friendly online portal accessible 24/7 from anywhere in the world. All you need is a computer and an internet connection to start learning online today. That's pathwayglobal.net, and connect with us too at cwsc.us or call 716-292-9571 and be sure to mention the CWSC team for savings.
Don't allow anybody to cause you to lose your self-respect to the point that you do not struggle for justice. However young you are, you have a responsibility to seek to make your nation a better nation in which to live. You have a responsibility to seek to make life better for everybody. And so you must be involved in the struggle for freedom and justice. Now, in this struggle for freedom and justice, there are many constructive things that we all can do and that we all must do. And we must not give ourselves to those things which will not solve our problems. You've heard the word nonviolent, and you've heard the word violent. I happen to believe in nonviolence. We've struggled with this method with young people and adults alike all over the South, and we have won some significant victories, and we've got to struggle with it all over the North because the problems are as serious in the North as they are in the South. But I believe as we struggle with these problems, we've got to struggle with them with a method that can be militant, but at the same time does not destroy life or property. And so our slogan must not be burn, baby, burn. It must be Bill, baby, Bill. Organize. Yes, our slogan must be learn, baby, learn, so that we can earn, baby, earn. And with a powerful commitment, I believe that we can transform dark yesterdays of injustice into bright tomorrows of justice and humanity. Let us keep going toward the goal of selfhood, toward the realization of the dream of brotherhood, and toward the realization of the dream of understanding goodwill. Let nobody stop us.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
We praise God and we witness that He is one and cares about all of us, all people, all nations, all the worlds. And we witness that the final revelation, the Quran, is revealed to Muhammad, and he's a messenger to all the people of the earth, and he's a mercy to all people and a mercy to all the worlds. We appreciate this opportunity to address the radio audience and to be here on this first Sunday of the year and this first day of the year, and I wish all of you all a happy new year.
I'm not talking about you here now. I'm speaking to the dead niggas. They're gone. And I think some of them hear me in that grave. That's what some of you niggas used to say. Yeah. I heard you with my own mouth. Some of you niggas used to say, this is a white man's world. White man on everything. I'm glad you niggas are dead. So here's the Quran, a herald of glad news, a herald of the good news that truth is here and falsehood perishes, and by its own makeup is doomed to perish. That's what Allah says in the Quran. By the very makeup, the very nature of falsehood dooms it to vanish and perish away, because the natural reality, the dynamics of the natural world are going to move and move and advance and crowd out ignorance, crowd out prejudices that have no real basis in reality. Crowd them out and won't be any place on earth for them anymore. We see now a global economy. Huh? A global economy where nations have to be respected. The rights to their resources have to be respected. The rights to the benefit from their resources has to be respected. Nobody can have it all to himself anymore. Can't inflate the white man's worth so big that he looks like God on earth. Can't do it anymore. Now, I'm not giving all credit to the Quran. I said there were many before who came with humanity, came preaching humanity, tried to get the world to accept that human family is one family, and we should all treat each other fairly, justly, appreciate each other, and have a world, a fair world, where anybody who wants to succeed and excel can do it
We're hearing call from world bodies like the World Conference of Religion and Peace and the World Parliament of Religions, Muslim World Congress, Rabita, World Muslim League, and other Muslim and Christian and Buddhist and Hindu bodies, and many others, coming together now. And what are they asking man to address? The need to have this earth be fair by all of these creatures. A just society, a global society that's fair and just, that recognizes all the members of the human family as being entitled to a share on this earth or in this earth, and a future on this earth, and equal basic rights, equal fundamental rights. This is what we're seeing. Call for global ethics, where the leaders, the policymakers, the rulers, will be obligated by law, that they will legislate by law, to treat their citizens with respect for their human nobility, human dignity that God created them for. This is what we're seeing now. And no matter how backward the society is or how far it is from coming into the light of its own nobility or its own worth as a creation of God, that the civilized man is obligated to respect him in his rights, though he does not yet know his rights. This is the Quran. The Quran has this role to awaken the good senses of man, to awaken him to his intellect, to his rational powers, to awaken him to his future as a rational creature on this earth, to his great future, as one capable of or given the capacity and the potential to actually study his environment and extract from it its utility, take from it its utility, and make himself a big, great, comfortable world serving the best condition for man, serving life on this earth for man. Now, Muhammad himself, the prophet to whom the Quran was revealed, his life addresses these ignorance, these prejudices directly. He was a man that glorified God. Most of us don't know Prophet Muhammad. Prayers and peace be on him. Sorry we don't know him. Even tradition has not given us to him correctly. They've told a lot of truths. But while giving us the truth, somehow they get us to act upon something that was not supported by the prophet's life or by his tradition. Let me give you a simple example. The prophet never said to anybody, Mr. So-and-so-and-so. Never. The prophet never said to anybody, Brother Abu Bakr. Never. But the Muslim world has come to believe that when we address each other, we say, Brother Hassan, Brother Sharif, Brother Muhammad, right? And we think that this is the best way to greet. If this is the best way to greet, how come the prophet didn't greet that way? How come Abu Bakr, God be pleased with, and Uthman, and Ali, and Omar, how come when they didn't meet, they say, As-salamu alaykum, brother? How come they didn't say that? As-salamu alaykum, brother. The prophet was so much above them, till they had to give him the respect, but they called him by his title. Ya Rasulullah, O messenger of God. But for them, speaking to each other, they say, Omar. Omar, so-and-so-and-so. Uthman, so-and-so-and-so. Ali, so-and-so-and-so. Now, we got the Western arrogance. We got the Western bourgeois.
the Western artificiality. Brother, alhamdulillah, brother. You don't even know my name. Hell, my name is Radical Dean. My name is Wallace, F.W. Dean. That's my name. You want to touch my heart? Call me Wallace. Oh, but brother is so much better. No, it's not. My brother called me Wallace. We can stretch our minds sometimes thinking we can do it better. We can't do it better. We can't do it better than Muhammad himself did it. May God grant him peace and the prayers be upon him always. You know, when I say prayers be upon him, you know what I mean? I mean that because of him, our prayers can be answered. He bears the prayers for us. Because of him, now our prayers can be answered. The complete man, the universal man, has been given to us from God. And on him rests all the prayers of humanity. Yes, because that is the prayer. The man doesn't know his prayer until he sees his time. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
Yes. How can you know your prayer before you see your time? When man, before man saw his time, he prayed for water. Because he couldn't get a clean glass too easily. He had to go for miles to get a clean glass of water. But when his time came for him to have access to good water, he stopped praying for water. Well, eventually, your time comes to have access to what all people need to have a good life on this earth. And then that's the prayer. That's the prayer. The prayer for that. The prayer for justice, the prayer for the end of racism, the prayer for the end of social injustice, the prayer for the end of oppressors, oppressing one people, oppressing one nation, because it has more power, more army, a bigger army or whatever than the other. That's the prayer. The prayer that man will one day be able to live in peace and not fear his fellow man. Not be afraid that his fellow man going to come and take what he has from him or enslave him or rape his women or take over his society and lead his children to a way of life that he disapproves of. This is the real prayer, that this earth will become an earth for humanity, an earth of fairness, justice. That's the real. But governments will become human governments. And governments will respect, have sacred regard for human life and human interests, and will not oppress man. This is the real prayer. And that time that time came close to us in the time of Muhammad the Prophet, and Allah prepared Muhammad the Prophet to bear that message. The message of universal truth, liberation, true liberation for the families of man on this earth, and justice came with him, and what all the prophets prayed for, what mankind prayed for, it rested upon the Prophet Muhammad to complete it. They preached humanity, but there was a logic needed. There was sciences that were needed to make that understandable and to advance business and economics, politics and government. You know, the world of politics and finances, it didn't advance until the coming of the Quran and Muhammad. Are you aware of that? That's a fact. Didn't advance until the coming of the Quran and Muhammad. Then we began to see progress for government, perception of government, progress for perception of even democracy. We don't like to use the term because the Westerners use it. But perception of a fair society where everybody will be represented and each individual's rights will be protected. That was Islam that brought that. That was the Quran that ushered that in, and it was Muhammad that led that society.
And after Muhammad in time came what we have as Western democracy, industry, and science, and technology, and all these benefits we have. So it seems that the world was given a disposition of mind from revelation that enabled it to benefit rationally and eventually from industry and technology, etc. And that the material progress went ahead, and I think Dr. King said this, went ahead of the human constitution. That man had developed more the material environment more than he had developed or cultivated the human constitution, the human makeup. And the progress and the material progress being so much ahead of the human progress was punishing the human progress, punishing what little human progress there was. There was. This is what happened. But eventually, as we said earlier, the dynamics, the global dynamics, especially in the focus of economics, what can happen economically on this earth, this dynamics, this dynamism and this dynamics has brought about conditions that now won't allow white supremacy, won't allow black supremacy, won't allow racism except as your private privilege. Yes, you can have it as your private privilege. You can preach it in your house. If you have a church of your own, you can preach it in your church. If you have the opportunity to get somebody that want to look at you or want to enjoy looking at you, freak of the old world on television, you can get on television, and you be thinking that they really giving you some credit. They ain't doing nothing but looking at a specimen, an outdated, antiquated, old specimen that has no life anymore in our world. Isn't this creature from the past interesting? Phil, he's so interesting to watch. Look at he believes this stuff. See, he believes in it. And then at the end of the program, we hope to have you back on the program to look at, to observe the freak of the past. We'd like to look at you again. Will you come back on our show? New day. Now, if we would, as Muslims, if we would study the Quran as we're supposed to, familiarize yourself with the Quran. The Quran is supposed to be read by all of us. We're supposed to have 100% literacy. We are not supposed to have any illiteracy in our society. The first word of revelation to our prophet was, read. Shouldn't that have some importance with you? We're Muslims. The first word Allah spoke to our prophet was read. So all of us should love that so much that look, the first thing God said to our prophet Muhammad was read. How can you not want to read? Ikra. Read. Bismi rabbika alladhi khalaq. Read in the name of your Lord who created. Then say, read in the name of Allah. Now it came in a way to teach you who God is. Didn't say God first. Read in the name, said God, but not by that name Allah. Not by the name that's God in Arabic. Read in the name of your Lord. And the word Rab means the one that raised you up. The one that raised you up. Who created. Now raise you up means responsible for you developing from a small, helpless, dependable thing to what you are now, proud of yourself, a man or a woman, Right? The one who raised you up off your knees, off your fours, all fours. That's what they used to call him when I was a boy. Get up off your all fours. Raised you up off your all fours, stood you up like a man, created that nation you. You're talking about a powerful spirit? The natural urge to evolve, to raise up from an infant or a toddler to a grown-up. That's a powerful urge. That's a powerful will. That's a powerful spirit. You see a little baby, you crawl around, and he ain't satisfied. That's why he think he's ready to try it. He pull up on something and hold it. And then you try letting it go. He grab it again, he's scared. Scared to touch his leg. And after a while, he'll raise up one day, and if you're there to watch it, man, it's just like seeing a new star come to life, come to birth in the heavens, a nebula, a born in the universe. He'll get up there. He'd be nervous a little bit. He'd look like every bit of strength in his whole being is concentrated just on that one effort. I'm going to stand. And then he'd look at you. And look at me. Look what I did. A miracle. I'm standing. Yes. Yes. Well, the flesh, we managed to get that flesh to stand up. But the next thing we have to get to stand up is our character and our intellect. And believe me, we who are blessed by God to feel that we have stood up straight in our character and in our intellect. Believe me, we experience that great miracle again. We'll be so happy. And we look at our baby and say, I wonder if they know. I wonder if they feel like we do. What do they know is making me feel so happy? I'm standing up in my moral strength. I'm standing up in my rational strength. I'm standing up in the human character and to the human intellect that God created for me. I'm standing now. I'm not nervous. I'm not afraid. I'm going to fall. And then walk, make progress with it. Praise be to Allah. This is what the Quran and Muhammad prepares us for. Muhammad, the prophet, prayers and peace be on him. He in his farewell speech, you know, a farewell speech tells you something in the name itself. Farewell speech. So if a man is about to leave, he's going to tell you things of importance. And he's not going to hit upon the things that are lesser important. He's going to hit upon those things that are of the greatest importance for your continued life. Huh? If he's a good man, a good father, or a good leader, he wants to see that you're situated to continue in your good life and make more progress in the future. That's what he wants. The prophet, obviously, thought that if we had to continue the good life of Islam, Muslim life, and make progress in the future, we had to address the treatment of our women. We had to address the treatment of the black man. Isn't that what he did in the farewell speech? We had to address respect for human life. Isn't that right? The blood of your brother. He had to address respect for human life. Now you look at our world today, 1995. What are our big problems? How come we have drug culture? How come we have the abuse of these drugs? Because there is not respect for human life that God created us to have. We don't have that respect. How come we have still women that are complaining they don't have their rights? Are we enslaving them? You know, we make progress in one area. You know, we tell a woman that, well, you don't have to get your husband permission to buy a car. He has no more rights than you to come down here and get a driver's license. So she's equal now. She drives the car, and believe me, she was fighting your face with her exhaust, man. Oh, she likes it. She likes it. She look at you. Hey, you want a race? And I done got to the age 9. I ain't gonna give her no contest. I sit right there and wait another couple of seconds. I'll get ahead. Go on, sister. Go on, sister. And we used to like those toys too. Your turn. Yeah. Just making a little, just have a little fun, you know. That's not serious. Now, she has a lot of rights, but still she feels that she's not respected. How come? And we have seen this addressed by so many people. Because she's still treated as a sex object by man, especially commercial man. The commercial world treats her as a sex object. Doesn't respect her. Wants to sell us shoelaces or a car or farmland. No matter what they want to sell us, they put her on there and have a leg up like this. You know? Or have her half naked, standing by what they're selling us, like we're going to get her with it. So they're not only disrespecting her, treating her as a sex object, they treated us also as a sex object. That's what they're doing. They're disrespecting both of us. Because they're saying that man, he about is quicker if he sees some yummy yummy with it. So they have laws against false advertising on it. One time some of our brothers gonna walk into the place with a shotgun. Say, hey, where my woman that's supposed to come with this car, man? Don't look like the picture I saw. The prophet prepared us to have the good life and keep it for the days ahead that were going to be terrible. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if the Muslims had become stronger and stronger on the principle of Tawheed, that the world, its created world, is one world under one universal law, and that the world of families, of race, and nations, and tribes are all one human family, and that there is no superiority of any color over the other. And if they had exercised that, if they had practiced it in their lives, if they had kept the respect that they were invited to, the respect for women, and had enabled women to progress education-wise and business-wise, and had equal or as much share in the material world and in the run of the world as they could command based upon their qualifications to pursue opportunities and prove themselves. Wouldn't that have been a wonderful thing for the Islamic world? If we had they were given everything so that they could do that, but they lost it. They lost it. You find much more respect for human life, even though some laws of what we call very severe, might even call them cruel laws, in the Muslim society, especially in Saudi Arabia. By our sensitivities, we might say those are cruel laws, to cut off the hand of a thief, to cut off the head of a prostitute. We might call those very cruel laws, you know, and I can understand it. But when it comes to human sensitivities, respecting human beings, they're much more sensitive than we are. A big change has to come on them for the worse before they accept that dope has a role and place in their society that it has in ours, drugs. But in a way, we are situated better than even Saudi Arabia. Because we believe in something that takes us out of this. I'm talking about the best idea of the American people. The best idea of the American people forces those who embrace that idea to be opposed to drugs and drug culture, drug life, drug society. We're opposed to that. And because of us being opposed to it, it hasn't really taken over our society completely. We're fighting it. Christian, Muslim, many other Americans fight it. And not only that, mistreatment of another people, of women. We have an idea that will take us out of that. And we are conscious of it. But the Muslim world, obviously, for the most part, they're not conscious of the great idea for making the world like God wants it and the world like the human nature wants it. They're not aware of it. They must not be aware of it. I think there is an awakening taking place in the Islamic world. I think more of the Muslim world is beginning to wake up to the world that Allah created us for on this earth, that he wants us to promote and see become a reality. I think more of them are waking up to it, but still too many are ignorant of it. It's savage to, in public or even at home, push your wife like that for nothing because she displeased you. Ha! Get over there. Go sit down. Leave me alone. Go in the bedroom and close the door. You don't talk to a wife like that, the grown woman. Not even supposed to talk to your children that way. Treat them like that. You're carrying three or four bags. Hey, stupid, pick up the bags. Talking to his wife. Hey, stupid, pick up those bags. Shut him up. Can't you do something? Stop him from crying. But we have men talking to women like that, don't we? Their wives. Treating their wives like that. I knew a man, and he was very good. He's an African-American man. I was talking about foreigners then. This is an African-American man. I knew African-American man. He was a business whiz. Everything he got in, he was just so successful. He was in computers. He was a big success. He got into stocks. He's a big success. I praised him. He knew I was one of his strongest admirers. He lived across the street from me. Diagonally. One day he told me he wanted me to come to his house. I went to his house and his wife was his slave. That man doesn't know how he felt in my eyes and how he hurt my heart. Here's a man I would have been admired. He called her like she was his dog. Let me explain to you what I mean. His dog that he had great pride in, you know. He said, called her by her name. He said, come here, I want you to meet Mr. Muhammad. And she came. I spoke to her. She spoke to him. He said, okay, you go back. That's the way you do a dog, isn't it? Hey, come here. Come here, fox. Yeah, this is my dog, man. This is a dog. It's a fine dog here. Fox, I raised it from a little pup. Okay, fox, get away. Right? Go play, fox. Well, that's the way you do it, right? Come on here, meet Mrs. Muhammad. She came, intelligent woman. Educated woman. Wasn't no fool. She's an educated woman. And a working woman. She had a job, too. After she met me, she said, okay, all right, you go back. Just like that. And she went back, just like that. Went back there wherever she was. I didn't see her again until I left. That was not a Muslim. That was a Christian man. Now, I don't think you're going to run into that often. Not even Muslim man. Some of these sisters are thick on that. Yeah, they put him in the hospital. He'd be on 6 o'clock news. Well, But that was a Christian man. Broke my heart. Now, believe me, there are men treating their women like that, mostly in third world countries. How can those countries come out of their slumber, come out of their material neglect, and develop their countries so that they're comfortable for their citizens, or at least tolerable for their citizens? How can they do that and they don't have respect for their mothers and for their sisters and for their wives? They can't do it. See, that's why Islam gives us the information we need to create for ourselves an environment to, for our that serves us as our life support. Don't you know that's what your religion is? The moral, spiritual, rational, etc. teachings in your religion is supposed to fill the world outside of you and go with you as though you were in a space bubble and seal you against the deadly influences of the crazy world without. You're supposed to be in your Muslim mind. You're supposed to have Muslim knowledge from the Quran and from the life of the prophets. And you're supposed to be protected by that life environment. That's a life-sustaining environment for you. The drug culture world, well, that poison penetrates your bubble, you'll be dead. Yeah? And then there's so many other influences out there that's ready to poison you and destroy you and kill you, check your progress and defeat your purposes and throw you down on your face. The influences out there waiting to do that. And some of you, you can't get up off your face. Turn to the Quran. Read it daily. Don't just read it during Ramadan. Read the Quran daily. You're new in it. You can't hear it on the radio. You can't hear it on TV. In Saudi Arabia, you can hear it on TV. You can watch and hear it on TV. I've been there. I know. Some other Muslim countries, you can hear the Quran read on television. We are not fortunate to have programs like that. So you have to read it yourself. We can't wait on you to come to a Jumu'ah once every other month and hear a little bit of Quran. Your life is being wasted in the meantime. You're dying. You're shriveling up as a Muslim. But you're not in touch with your life. The Quran is our life. Muhammad, the prophet, is the model for our life. We are to live the Quran as he lived it, not as we choose to live it. Without guidance, we have to live the Quran as Muhammad lived it. Or should we go to war with the world if it's necessary? Yes, sir. If it's necessary. But did he go to war with people, with the Sabians? He did not. He didn't war with the Sabians. And there were other people that he didn't war with. But yes, if it's necessary, we should even be prepared to go to war with people. And believe me, if you're right, you shouldn't fear to go to war with anybody. I'm not afraid to go to war with anybody. Well, I'm not going to go to war with anybody on some stupid notion. No, I'm going to know that now God obligates me to go to war. And believe me, I ain't going out there by myself. Because God says, war all of you together. I'm going to try to have as many with me as I possibly can. And I'm going to consider the forces that we have to come up against very carefully. And maybe I'll start fighting them by running. Yeah, sometimes running is a whipping on your enemy. Yeah, I just start running and let them chase me for about 20 years maybe. So as Muslim teachers and educators, imams,
We are obligated to equip ourselves with the knowledge and the guidance that God has given us, that guides us in this world and guides us also for the hereafter, or to the hereafter. We should equip ourselves with the knowledge and use it to make a better environment for ourselves, an environment that will enable us to have more security and a better future as Muslims, as human beings. Start with your immediate environment, your home. And at the same time, give your good support, your well-meaning, sincere support to your congregation that you belong to, your masjid that you belong to. And don't be satisfied with your masjid burdening your heart. That's not right. You come to the masjid and the masjid burdening your heart and you won't say anything. You just keep coming. You're afraid that maybe somebody won't like you or maybe what you say might not be accepted. We say, my life and my death is all for Allah. Surely I've turned myself to thee, O Allah, Lord of the worlds. I associate none with you. We say that's a prayer, isn't it? Surely my life and my death is all for Allah. Yes, we say that. I don't associate any with you. Guide me to the best of morals. So what is this life that you're ready to give God? It is a life that stands upon moral grounds. Guide me to the best of morals. Surely none can guide to the best of morals but thou. And save me from the wicked or from the evil morals. But none can save from that except thou. So if you sit there with a burden on your conscience, and you see the same situation staying week after week, and that's your mom's, but you don't have the courage. So the prophet also said, prayers and peace be upon him. But we have the obligation to correct wrongs, to stop wrongdoing that when you see it. We have an obligation to do that. And he says, if you can't stop it with your hands, I mean with a physical act, if it requires a physical act, then at least speak out against it with your tongue. Check it with your tongue. Be against it with your speech. And if you can't find the strength to do that, at least condemn it in your heart. Condemn it in your heart. Don't give it any support. Don't accept it in your heart. And he says that is the weakest form of jihad. Right? To just say, well, I know it's wrong in my heart. I see it. I can't do anything about it. But I know it's wrong in my heart. He said that is the weakest form of jihad. Not that he's not giving those persons credit. I said that to say to the sister or the brother that's guilty of keep coming to the masjid every week and seeing a wrong there that burdens their heart and they won't speak out against it and won't do anything about it. I'm saying that to say to you, that just by the fact that you don't like it, that is something that gets you some credit with God. But we can't have protection for our communities and the progress we want if all our people are going to be like you. We have to have some people that will speak out against wrong and some that will be prepared to even use their fists or their arms or their physical forces to correct wrongs in our community. And this is what we're going to need. Now, I'm sure you can exercise that muscle at home. Go home and get... I like the keynote speaker. Make that home a Muslim. He said, make your business a Muslim. You remember the keynote speaker, Amir? He was... Brother Amir Muhammad, I think. Amir Muhammad. It was in Newark, but he's from Texas, huh? Kansas City, pardon me. From Kansas City. But I'm in Muhammad from Kansas City. He said, make your business a Muslim. And I think what he meant is make it halal. But make it
make it respect Muslim obligation. Treat it as an individual. Make it respect Muslim obligation. There's an obligation on a Muslim to pray, to give zakat. He said, put all those obligations on your business. It was a wonderful talk he gave us in Newark. I have to now bring this to a conclusion. I didn't even intend, it was not my intention to talk to you this long today. So I'm going to bring my talk to a conclusion. And I think I did cover the main two points I wanted to cover, and that was that the Quran prepares us and guides us to have an environment for a good life and a good future. And Muhammad has demonstrated, he's the model for us, demonstrating how the Quran is to be lived and applied or practiced in our life. And he has prepared us for life, a good life on this earth, and he has prepared us for a good future. And if we had stuck with what Prophet Muhammad left us with as essential, as most important, we would not be backwards anywhere in the world, but we would be the most advanced society in the world today. Thank you very much. As-salamu alaykum.
Praise be to Allah. Let us utilize what we've been given. Dear brothers and sisters, it's been an excellent weekend for all of us and those who just participated on the day. You couldn't beat the day anywhere in Atlanta, anywhere in this country, probably anywhere in the world. So we thank Allah much for giving us this opportunity to share the thoughts and the direction of Imam Warazuddin Muhammad that is clearly based and entrenched in the Quran and in our religion of Al-Islam, and the firm faith and support, faith in Allah and support for the tradition established by the Prophet, peace be upon him. We'd like to ask Imam Yusuf Salim to come up as we leave. Let me remind you that you still have envelopes support the ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad. So those envelopes, if you don't have any, there are some out as you go out, or we can pass them out. Please turn those in, and we'll put those right in the hand of the Imam. May Allah bless all of us. Imam Yusuf Salim.
We ask if you could hold your seats, please.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Nyla Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developed Mental State. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay, assalamu alaikum. Again, I repeat what I said. I wasn't aware of that. Didn't recognize the PSA playing, but we listened to Imam W.D. Muhammad speak most appropriately on a topic that's connected to the topic that we're talking about as it relates to healing from childhood trauma. And very often, in most case scenarios, that healing kind of escapes us because most of the trauma that we experience is in childhood. And unless we understand and can see the cycles of abuse and how to address the actual healing, then we'll continue to perpetuate injuring our own children or allowing them to be in the way of injury so that they used as the enemy's tool to perpetuate a reason to be fretful or fearful of the dunya and the just the disconnection of Allah, or the disconnection that comes with believing and fearing those things that do not matter, if you will. So next week we're going to be talking about some of the one of the most pervasive personality disorders that our society faces as it relates to damaging our children or allowing our children to be damaged and to be further used by the enemy to perpetuate harm on mankind. We heard Imam W.D. Muhammad speak about how to address those issues and how Islam addresses those issues, if you will, how it solves those problems. But unless you, and he spoke eloquently about, you know, the Muslim that is semi-active or not very active, if you will, but calling the Muslims to be active in becoming literate, that's most critical in actually developing critical thinking skills and in being in a place where you're operating out of your higher brain and not a place where you're operating out of your lower brain, if you will. So we'll join us again next week. Again, we will be here at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Many of us, I see, showed up later today, and perhaps that may have been because we're not really sure of the time that we're airing. But again, join us again every Tuesday here. mean, keeping it real as we address the reconstruction of parenting. I'm going to go ahead and get out of the seat now so the next host can come in, Sister Manira, as she hosts It's All About Worship and Marriage. Thank you again for joining us, and assalamu alaikum.